took me by the hand. You made me a man that one night.
One night.
You made everything all right.
Right.
That one night.
One night.
You made everything all right.
Right.
So raw, so right, all night, all right, oh yeah.
It says so raw?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he says so raw. Oh. So raw, so right, all night, all right, oh yeah. Because I used to think it was so wrong, so right.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought
and
it was.
And then I watched this with captions, and it said so raw, so right. And then I looked it up afterward, and I was like, no, that's so much worse.
Oh my. Oh my goodness.
I hate it. I was okay with so wrong, so right, but so raw, so right? No, 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 no.
We are talking about the episode of The Office.
The
episode, season 4, episode 9, Dinner Party. Oh boy, this is an award-winning episode. It is so much to so many. And it is probably the biggest cringe you could possibly imagine watching.
It's just very difficult to get through.
And this was their intention the entire time with this episode. There is a very big article from Rolling Stone where all of people from the cast and the crew and the directors and the writers, everyone is talking about their experience with this episode and kind of how it came to be. And it's just a really, really great read if you are a fan of The Office and you want to get more in depth on this episode in particular. And it really highlights everything that went down and how this episode played out. And I gave homework last week. Or 2 weeks ago, because we were on a writer's strike, just like they were at the time, right? I want to bring that around. So
nice.
We're playing into that. There was totally, we didn't cross the picket line. There was a strike. That's why we were gone last week, but we're back. And I had suggested to everybody to somehow consume information about the play by Edward Albee, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Mm-hmm. I feel very vindicated and validated and all of those wonderful words because in the very beginning of this article, they talk about this episode as being called Who's Afraid of Jan Levinson Gould? Mm-hmm. So I feel awesome that this actually was based on a lot of the themes in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. So I'm like, yeah,
you were right.
Thank you, education.
And in watching that, that was just as difficult, if not more difficult and cringy to watch.
Oh yeah, that play and that and the movie that followed, it is very, very dark. And this is a very dark episode of The Office. It's very dark comedy, but the play is way, way worse.
I mean, because with the play, at least for me, you don't have the comfort of having these characters that you know to sort of have that established as a base. Like, I can at least say I am familiar with these people and I know sort of a little bit about them and I know what they're thinking and I know, well, I don't know what they're thinking, but I can get an idea of what they're thinking. With this play, watching it, I was so uncomfortable because these characters are introduced to me in this moment and I'm watching this play out and it's fascinating watching, you know, an adaptation from a stage production to a movie and how that changes and how sometimes dialogue on stage doesn't quite do as well as dialogue in a sort of screenplay. And so there's lots of just like, there's a lot going on. And so if you want to watch that, you know, watch that play or read that play or what have you, maybe have a stiff drink, as they do in the show many, 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 many times over and over again.
It's definitely not a comedy. It's, you know,
not at all.
It's an absurdist existential drama, and there's a lot going on. But the same themes kind of echo between that play and this episode. And those themes are generally like the disappointment that they're like these couples' life together brings them, and mm-hmm. then the subsequent bitterness and anger that they have towards each other. And they're doing all of this on display in front of other people in their house. So that's where this all comes from. But The Office takes it to a comedy place, but the themes are still there. What we're seeing and why this is so dark is we're seeing the end of Michael and Jan. We're seeing the deep unhappiness that is going on in their relationship inside their home and everything that they've been putting each other through. And they are just, they're passive aggressive comments back and forth to each other in front of everybody, and we're all experiencing it. And the documentary style is bringing us all into that world. It's making us all Jim and Pam and Angela and Andy, and we are sitting in this in this condo with them experiencing this really toxic relationship.
Yeah, you said, you know, the deep unhappiness that's in the relationship. It also is showing the deep dysfunction mm-hmm. of this relationship. This is just a household that's breaking apart at the seams, so much so that, you know, I think about having hosted events with my partner in the past and having people over, and maybe something comes up where, you know, you and your partner kind of have like a little, a disagreement about something, or that, you know, there's something in the household that, maybe you don't like the type of cheese that they always want to eat or something. And, or the way that they keep forgetting to put a coaster down before they put something on the table. I don't know what it is, but like you, if you have a functional relationship and you have those tiny little things, then that typically doesn't get seen by your guests. It's something that you can handle sort of, you know, not worrying about, not making a big deal of, but in this, every single thing, I mean, watching from the get-go, it's so bad that, and we do need to talk about the cold open as a separate thing, but just watching, I was kind of paying attention to almost in every cut, almost in every little scene that takes place here, we hear Michael throwing these little jabs about Jan, and then Jan throwing the little jabs back. And they're subtle things like, oh yeah, this office that's never been used. And oh, there are lots of odors going on in here. And it's these tiny little things that, you know, are sort of cries for help, but also like cries for wanting to be heard by someone else. You know, like you want to have those things confirmed. And you, if you think about like a couple in a house sort of handling all this stuff and it's breaking apart, they're in their own little world. Now they've brought all these people over, and they kind of, instead of like sharing the happiness and the joy of their relationship, that's not there. So they have to share their turmoil and their frustration, because that's all they've got to share.
In the article that's about this episode, Greg Daniels, the executive producer of the show, he had this great phrase that he used, and it was called the killing field. And it was what he described that as is that when they go to the nonstop jokes, right? Like they're just on top of each other, joke, 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 back and forth, a lot like we've mentioned before in conference rooms sometimes, or when the characters of The Office are trying to fluster Michael in some way. And he was describing that how this episode is kind of like one of those killing field moments where you're just barraged with joke after joke, no matter what. It's just, oh, every single line is a one up of the line before it. And I love the way that that's described. And I think we can go forward in our discussion of the show when we come across these killing field moments. And
I love that that's got a term now.
Yeah. I'm like, that's what makes The Office such a great comedy, because they have those moments where it's just so quick and you get that little, you know, hit of endorphins in your brain just for being able to follow it. It's really, really fantastic. And that's what this episode is absolutely full of. And even though the jokes aren't like belly laughing, ha 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 jokes, a lot of them are really uncomfortable, upsetting jokes, but they still are. And I love that dark humor in this episode. And it's just absolutely nonstop. It starts basically the second that Jim and Pam get to the condo. But before we talk about that, we do need to talk about the cold open, because that is the perfect setup for this entire episode.
Michael, you clever, clever cat. you can't count Michael out, and I think that we're constantly reminded of that.
Michael has asked Pam and me to dinner at least 9 times, and every time we've been able to get out of it. But I gotta give him credit. He got me. Because I'm starting to suspect that there was no assignment from corporate.
I gotta give him props for that. Like, at that point, if I was in the situation, I would say, you know what, Michael, you win. Because you totally got us. And I don't know, I don't want to, like, we don't need to do a recounting precisely of what happens, but it's just, it's the perfect Michael Scott going to magic camp and learning about directing the audience. What's that called?
Misdirection.
Yes, misdirection. It's a classic misdirection. We throw Jim and Pam into thinking that they shouldn't plan for things after work because there is something that they need to do at work. And then bada bing, bada boom, he hits the button on his wand that makes the dove appear.
It's basic entrapment, really. He entrapped them.
He did. He did. And doesn't he know that's illegal in the FCC? I don't know. That's probably not true. Don't quote me on that. No, it's brilliant. And I give him props for that. I think, like I said, we see Jim basically give him props for that. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful start where I don't know if this was my first time seeing it, I think I would be like laughing and thinking, oh my goodness, Michael, how you totally pulled that off. Good for you. But I wouldn't know to regret that having happened until we actually get into it.
Once Michael has his elaborate setup to get everyone to work just so he can get basically Jim and Pam to hang out with him, which has been mentioned in previous episodes, it has come up before. He has tried to get them over to have dinner at his house or hang out with him, and they have always had excuses. It's not just a one line of dialogue thing here. This has literally, we've seen this in previous episodes. But the comedy really starts happening as soon as they get to the house. And right away, the whole awkward introduction scene, it's such fake enthusiasm, and the delivering of the wine, which Jan then, she says she would cook with it, which is such an insult. The idea of doing the tour or the appetizers, like, it's so
babe
suburban house party. And it's just like this really, really awkward, strange environment right away. Like, everyone has this, there's a weird settling low hanging fog of awkward in this entire apartment.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Come on in. Oh, good to see you.
Chilly, huh? Oh, I'm so glad we finally got to do this with you guys.
It's great.
Yeah. You want to take their coats, maybe?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
All right.
So, what have you been doing?
Let's see, since I saw you an hour ago?
Yeah.
I have been getting ready and then driving over here.
Well, so we've been doing pretty much the same thing.
Really?
Except driving.
We got you this.
Oh, well,
oh,
Pam,
Vino.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's so nice. This will be great to cook with. Really?
We'll have a seat or come on in or, I don't know, make yourself to home. This is our casa.
Really nice.
So
really?
What do you guys think? Should we do the tour first? We have appetizers first?
Tour. Let's do the tour first.
Okay. Yeah. You have a preference, babe? Upstairs first?
Totally your call, babe.
All right. Well, let's go then. I see upstairs.
So this episode, a lot happened, but it's more about the comedy and the awkwardness that happens. I found a lot of interest in what was happening with the actors themselves in this episode. And so I feel like there's going to be a little bit more talking about that here this time, because it was so fascinating to me that they were all hot the entire time. Like, it was very, very warm out, even though there's a bit in the whole thing that they were cold.
Yeah, where Pam's cold, yep. And like shaking her,
and
her hands on her arms.
And they were laughing like the entire time. Like, they
yes.
were all saying that they could not stop laughing at every single moment that came up in this episode. And if you start watching really, really, really closely, you can totally see them all smiling as the camera kind of cuts away from them.
Yeah, as far as I understood, there were a lot of cuts to make it work, especially, yes. especially the scene where Michael grabs his tiny, tiny plasma screen television
yes.
and shows how he can put push it into the wall to make space. Apparently that sight gag just wrecked them all. They just could not stop laughing at that. And they had to like keep refilming it over and over and over again and had to just do a bunch of different like scene cuts in order to make it work because they could not hold character. They kept breaking.
I finally broke down and bought myself a plasma TV. Check it out. I actually hung this on the wall myself.
It's good.
I want to show you something. A lot of people in the room, you need more space. Voila, right into the wall.
Wow.
Sometimes I will just stand here and watch television for hours. I love it. I love this TV.
The laughter allegedly all started basically at the table read. Like there was very few or almost no rewrites to this script. It was just done and everyone absolutely loved it. And there was so much laughter and comedy in it. I think it became a very quick favorite among the cast. And I really like knowing that about this episode. I like seeing that this is kind of a beacon that stands out in the whole arsenal of Office episodes.
To me, I think it is one of few quintessential episodes of The Office where you can point to it and say, this is what the show's comedy is about. And I'm curious, do you feel like, because there are some episodes, I think, where you can watch them and appreciate the comedy of the show and sort of get a grip, an understanding of what the show's comedy is. But do you think that this episode is helped in it's almost sounds like I'm leading you to an answer, but I'm really not, like whether you think it is or is not. Do you think that this episode is helped by having some background understanding of the characters? Do you get more out of it having watched the show up to this point? Or do you think that someone who just sort of like tunes in on this episode can get just as much out of it, in your opinion?
That is actually a good question, because I think I could see it either way. I think the comedy comes from the situation that they're in, but you do need to know a little bit about the relationship of these couples. But at the same time, it just is such an awkward thing. Like it's already written into the script how bizarre this all is. You can see right away how uncomfortable everyone is, and the way Jan has obviously just taken over the entire apartment, and the little jabs between her and Michael start right away. You know, like if someone comes into your house and hands you a bottle of wine and you say, oh, this will be great to cook with, that's funny regardless of who you know who that is. Michael going off about his vasectomies, it's funny regardless of knowing who this is.
That's true.
Snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap.
And like the awkward charades.
My turn.
The obvious Jan dancing to the Hunter song.
You took me by the hand.
There's so many things. Or even just Jan saying, it's going to be 3 hours before our dinner party actually starts.
Oh, not even close.
Oh, no. Just the ossobuco needs to braise for about 3 hours. Everything else is done.
All of these little bits, I don't think you need to know anything about the characters to see the humor and the darkness that's in this episode.
So I'm with you on that. That's my estimation of this episode. It's, in my opinion, I think that you can tune in randomly and this episode holds up as just as a good episode of The Office that anyone could sort of watch it and get something out of. And that is why I really like this episode of The Office.
I mean, just when they do the house tour and there's Jan's office and her workspace.
So you have an office and a workspace.
I do. You know, I cannot create in the same space that I conduct business. I'm sure that you're the same with your doodles.
And just watching Jim's face when he's in the candle room and how he has to like stick his head out of the door to breathe a little bit. It's so great how they're able to catch all these little things and have so much subtext in the way Jim and Pam are experiencing this tour of the house and how everyone's just kind of experiencing the night and the awkwardness of it. And they aren't saying anything. And it's those long, heavy silences that is really where a lot of this, the comedy and the beautiful acting lie.
I agree. There's a part that I didn't ever pick up on before, or maybe I just didn't like make an aware note of it before, that I really like. And that's whenever Andy and Angela show up and they're sort of welcoming them in, and Michael goes to hug Angela, and Angela's like, no, no, no. And she won't let Michael give her a hug. And I think it was Ed Helms who said in the Rolling Stone piece something about like this being a crucible for all of these characters. And that is truly what this is. It's all of these characters get thrown into this very awkward situation. And I mean, it actually was literally a crucible too, because you said it was hot on set, but you have to work, you know, with all of these characters in this small area, and they're all under just so much pressure because of the awkwardness. Like that lays so heavily, and everybody keeps saying like, oh, maybe we should go, maybe we should go. And I love that is, you know, that opportunity for these characters to become even more. But this made me think of something. Andy pre-anger management would not have been, in my opinion, funny in this episode. No. If he just like got offended by something and got angry and flew off the handle or something like that, that would have been so not funny. And I think that that's where, you know, this, we talk about a crucible. I think that this is also sort of like proving ground in a way too. Mary Berry would be proud of this proofed dough, I guess is what I'm saying, of Andy Bernard, because this character is starting to take shape and really like change for the better and be a character that I am interested in instead of constantly annoyed by. And so I appreciate that there's that extra bit to it.
Something else that we kind of learned from, again, from that article that I read, but it translates into a lot of other episodes of The Office, but this one in particular, Greg Daniels would tell the camera people to basically close their eyes and spin around before he said action. And as soon as he said action, they were supposed to open their eyes and find the scene, you know, find what's happening. And that's how you get those great, swift, documentary style camera shots, because they are searching the actors' faces for reactions.
And, oh my goodness.
Right? It's so brilliant. And that's a lot of how it was filmed, because they were also being informed by shows like Survivor at the time. And they are, you're not directing a camera to say like, okay, zoom in over here, now pan left, now look at this character. It can't work like that. It has to be much more immediate if you're looking to catch genuine emotions and reactions. And that's how they kind of got the camera to do that. I mean, and that happens a lot in this episode. It's a lot of quick reactions. It's a lot of Jan makes a snide comment about Pam possibly, you know, having interest in Michael, and the camera just darting over to Pam's reaction, right? Like Jan says something, the camera reacts just as quickly as Pam does, and it goes over to her reaction. And I think that that's so great, and that brings this extra level to this episode. And then we have the wonderful way they did the confessionals, where they're whispering in the bathroom, and they actually did film it inside of a tiny bathroom. And they said that the camera person and the boom mic operator, like everyone is just kind of like perched up on like the sink and the toilet, and just like trying to get the sense of basically no escape, that you're stuck in this tiny place.
Yes, it does feel
place.
Very tight.
And that's all they're trying to do in the confessional, really, is like escape and express their discomfort. And it is really, really well done.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that claustrophobia there for sure. I'm going, oh golly, I don't want to be in here. They're trying to whisper, but you feel like everybody outside could potentially hear what's being said. Poor Pam is, you know, worried about Jan, who is really going in on her about Michael now suddenly, you know, or not suddenly, because there's been some hints of it throughout, but we find out that maybe Michael alleged that, or seemed to suggest to Jan that at one point Pam and him dated. And so then Jan is jealous of Pam and keeps sort of making eyes at her. And there's all of this just, this tension. Back and forth there. Yeah, the tension. It's incredible as we see these looks from Jan toward Pam. And that, and then we have like Pam like going into the bathroom. It's almost like Blair Witch style, trying to hide away from the danger. And can we talk too about that brilliant scene where Jim almost left Pam there?
Michael and Jan seem to be playing their own separate game, and it's called Let's See How Uncomfortable We Can Make Our Guests. And they're both winning, so I am going to make a run for it.
It's truly one of those save yourself things where you're like, I don't know. I think in this situation, you probably would leave me. So I'm going to just go ahead and roll out until Pam's like, no. Let me talk in code here. Oh, so good.
You'll never guess. I just got a message from my landlord. Apparently my apartment flooded. Something with the sprinkler.
Oh, no.
Pam, we should probably get going and see the damage.
Oh, okay.
Well, you don't need two of you to do that.
That's true. Dinner sounded delicious. Pam, I'll see you at home. Thank you so much. It was a great night.
Jim, I don't think you're going to abandon this party here all by itself.
I don't know, because everything I own is there.
You can buy new stuff, but you can't buy a new party.
I love what she says to Jim. It's so perfect, the eyes she gives and the inflection she uses. It really is one of those, like, you better not leave me or I will end you. I love too how it comes back at the end where he starts to mention that he needs to go because his apartment's on fire, and Pam reminds him, no, it was actually flooded.
Jim, Pam, my apartment's on fire.
Flooded.
There's this one great moment that I really want to highlight where Jan and Michael are really kind of tearing into each other with the snide comments. And Jan is sitting in front of the fire wearing this red blouse. And Michael calls her she calls herself the devil.
And I moved in and I cleaned it. So I guess that makes me the devil.
You are. She is. She is the devil. I'm in hell. I'm burning. Help me.
You shouldn't joke about that.
And so she puts the finger horns up and she's laughing with finger horns and the fire behind her and the red shirt. It was just too perfect with this maniacal laughing back and forth and the way Michael reacts to her. And it's just this whole scene, everything of the way it looks is so Jan has taken over, you know, like it has become all Jan. And then we get that scene where the guys are off in the garage and Michael pitches them to invest in Jan's candle company, which
so
is
awkward.
Obviously something Jan had encouraged him to do. And all of his stuff is crammed in.
Yes, the Bowflex machine is out there.
It's crammed in the garage.
Hand chairs.
In the article about the show, they were writing about how the things that are in there, they really thought about them. They thought like, oh, Michael would be like late night TV shopping, right? Like he seems like that kind of person and he buys all the things or something he sees on late night TV, like the hand chairs. And he's like, I gotta have those. They're so cool and funny and that's who I want to be.
Given his monkey problems, yeah, he would definitely have all that junk.
Oh, like yeah.
Sky Mall?
Yeah, basically like Sky Mall, but, you know, like Home Shopping Network and infomercials and just seeing stuff on TV. And so, like, that's what all of Michael's things basically are. You know, they're like impulse purchases and they're all filling the garage. And then everything that's in the apartment is so painfully Jan. Michael has just been completely removed.
I mean, she has a workroom and an office.
And the entire bed to herself.
The bed to herself. It's been repainted eggshell white. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all Jan all the time. And everything except for we don't know, it could be pine or Nordic cherry, but that
it's
table that
pine.
Michael made. Another thing that I want to point to, and hopefully we'll drop in a clip here, simply because anytime I'm trying a new vintage of wine, I have to say,
oh no,
sort of an oaky afterbirth.
Oh no.
Hmm. That is sort of an oaky afterbirth.
Mm. What was that?
He doesn't know anything about wine, but he has to say something. And so that's what he says. And I think it's with like red wine too, so it doesn't really make sense anyway. Oh boy.
There's a lot of Miss Wine knowledge in this episode. You got the wine bottle in the beginning. You have Michael with the oaky afterbirth. And then later on when Dwight shows up, his wine glass, it's obvious he's not had wine before. He fills it all the way up like it's a water glass, so like it's absolutely totally filled up, which is such a hilarious off to the side sight gag, because he brought his own wine glasses and wine when he shows up. We should talk about Dwight showing up, which is a significant thing, because he was not invited to the party based on Jan's criteria of him not being in a couple and they don't have enough wine glasses. But he shows up with fixes for all of that.
Yeah, because we kind of thought at the beginning it was Michael saying that Dwight couldn't come because of these reasons. Mm-hmm. And then, because that's how it starts out, of course, is Michael saying, hey, you can't come because this, this, and this. And then that's right whenever he invites Andy and Angela as well. And then later on, we come to find out that really it was Jan who was like, no, Dwight is not coming to this thing. And then sort of gave some reasons why that made sense. So Dwight brings his former nanny, some wine glasses, and even his own food to this party so that he can be there. And this is one of those things where if things weren't so going so poorly between them, then maybe this would have gone a different way. But Michael kind of sees this as, yes, here's a way for me to get on Jan's nerves even more now because we're fighting. And I think that just really makes this brilliant.
What now?
Coming.
Hello.
What are you doing here?
We came here to eat dinner and to party. This is a dinner party, right?
Awesome. What is he doing here?
Yes, what are you doing here?
Dwight is my friend.
We weren't invited?
You said that I could not invite Dwight because he was not part of a couple and because we didn't have enough wine glasses. Dwight brought glasses and a person.
Fine, so, whatever you want. Just like always, whatever you want.
Whatever I want. It's never whatever I want.
Yeah, the emotions are so high at the door, but I do love the moment when the door opens up and Dwight shows up and Pam whispers, awesome. It's like the first entertaining, amazing thing that's happening. She's like, this is the best. Just throw that fuel right on the fire. It's going to be so good. I can't wait to watch this just absolutely explode in everyone's face. And yeah, at the door, the emotions are so, so high. Michael gets into the whole vasectomy thing and they start
snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap.
Oh my gosh. And Jan just loses it with like, let's have a kid. And like, it was just.
She even says the F word, like that you can only do that so many times in a show that doesn't, you know, allow real cursing. And I want to give The Office props for really spacing those out and making them really like
poignant.
It just hits home. Yes, it really hits home when it happens. And this is one of those times where it's like, yes, you made a good choice here.
Yeah, we have the most volatile, like back and forth right there at the door, but everyone's still trying to keep it together. And Dwight and his date are just standing at the door. She's holding that cooler the whole time, just standing there, seeing if this is actually going to happen. I love that moment. It's so tight. Like all the people in there are just all together and the emotions are all strung up. Like everyone's max rubber band stretched out at that moment. But we have not broken yet. Oh no. Because the very next scene, everyone's at the dinner table.
We finally are sitting around getting ready to eat. And Well, actually eating. And of course, this is where, like I said, the poisoning, Michael being worried about him being poisoned. And then, of course, Jan or Pam's like, if anyone's going to be poisoned, it's going to be me. And see, honestly, I feel for her in that moment because I don't know about Jan. She could do anything, it seems.
Yeah.
But Michael makes the mistake of truly kind of a gross thing, dipping his meat into his glass of wine. And that just was the straw that broke the camel's tooth because Michael has soft teeth. How dare you? And so he gets up and goes and gets his beer sign. And that beautiful glow that they're all basking in is, it's almost like somebody invented, you know, like you can use a UV light and see gross stains in places. It's almost like somebody invented this machine that can show you the aura of awkwardness in a room. And as soon as he turns that on, it's like the whole room lights up with this glow. And it's just like, holy moly, look at that awkward atmosphere that exists in this place. It's just built up.
There's nothing like some humming neon to really, you know, enhance the awkward of a scene. Yeah. And then Jan, she gets up, she puts on her Hunter song and starts ignoring that. And then this is the point.
This feels, I got to say really quickly, like this feels very Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Yes.
The part where the guy grabs the gal, what is her name, Honey, mm-hmm. grabs Honey's hands and is dancing around. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? That's exactly what this part feels like. It's sort of a big swelling moment of everybody shouting, and it's very awkward and very unsettling.
Everyone's really pushing all the buttons right out in the open now. Before, it was like subtle little things. They were playing charades and they were, you know, kind of misunderstanding Michael on purpose.
Rhyming.
And Jan was getting frustrated. And like, there were a lot of little things happening all over the place. Jan trying to awkwardly dance with Jim. There was little comments here and there about the Dundies, like all this kind of stuff. It keeps piling on, if you kind of think of it as like just a cumulative pile of tension and insults to each other. And this is the point where basically you throw that last stone on the pile and it just comes cascading down, and it is just a giant shit show.
Very good. I mean, that is what it is. And it's them now going from subtle jabs to just stabbing each other, essentially. Yes.
It gets violent when she throws that Dundee at the flat screen. Oh my gosh. Everyone's face in that scene was so great.
That is a $200 plasma screen TV you just killed. Good luck paying me back on your $0 a year salary plus benefits, babe.
Just an absolute explosion of emotion between Jan and Michael. And everyone else was just watching the car wreck.
And with this scene, too, I think it's very symbolic that it's the two things in the house that Jan has let Michael sort of have. She takes the Dundee, which he's allowed to have, and throws it at his television, which he spent so much time talking about. Mm-hmm. I love this TV. I love this TV. And she takes those two things that are the only things really that he gets to have in this open space that's supposed to be shared, and she wrecks both of them. And so him snapping in the way that he does and saying what he says about her not making any money, I think that comes from a place of like real hurt, because what else is his in that house, you know?
Exactly. And he was the one that's been supporting all of this insanity,
supporting,
really.
Mm-hmm. This is what I have to come home to.
So the cops show up at this point, which makes a lot of sense. But I also really like how Dwight throws himself in there and the cops are just like, not now, Dwight.
Get out of my way. I'll take care of this. Okay, what seems to be the problem, officers?
Not now, Dwight. We got a call about a disturbance.
Nope, nothing disturbing here.
Do you remember when the fire department was the same way?
Yep,
when
that's
Ryan
right.
started the fire? Yeah, he's... clearly he's trying to have a relationship with all of the local like emergency officials,
which we see later on too when he gets pulled over. They're like, stop the car,
right.
Dwight.
Dwight, not again. Yeah, so I love that sort of lore of Dwight Schrute, that he just has this he thinks that he's their pals, but they are like, no, no, Dwight, no.
With all of this happening, you feel like that this would kind of be the end of the episode. But I think in perfect office fashion, and really, like, if this were an actual group of people having a super awkward dinner party that they really didn't even get to eat at, what would you do if you were one of these couples?
You'd go out and find food.
And then you would debrief on what just happened, like while you sat in the car, right? That's exactly what would happen. And that's exactly what we get to see. I like that we get the payoff of each person or each couple, really, and Dwight plus Michael, because Dwight's taking Michael home. We get to see all of their reactions and the closing out of the evening for each of these couples. And Angela obviously hates Andy. So sad.
Oh, my. So here's the thing is that I identify with her disgust. I do not identify with her action after having that disgust. Like, there was a little part of me that was like, you know what? I kind of had this moment of like, respect, Angela. Like, I got some respect for you, Angela, because she was like, I don't like what you just did, and here's how I'm reacting to it. And I don't think that she, like I said, I don't think that she reacted in a great way, but I respect her.
That's so funny to me. I feel like if you're in a relationship with someone, you can steal their ice cream.
Not me. So here's the deal. You can steal my ice cream if you've said, hey, could I have some of your ice cream? And I say, oh yeah, absolutely. But if you just reach over and no, I'm sorry. No, no. RESPCT, find out what it means to me. So anyway, I respected Angela in that moment. But I assume you're not an Angela in this situation.
No. I'm more of a, once you're in a relationship, there's all that, you know, there's ice cream consent there. You can steal.
Ice cream consent. You know what? I love that there are different dynamics. It's I just all you have to do, you just gotta ask me. Just don't reach for my plate and take things off of it. Thanks. Because then I like,
but speaking of taking things,
like, bite your finger off. Anyway, go ahead.
Speaking of taking things,
yeah,
I love
what
Jim stole the Hunter CD, and the way he reveals it to Pam in the car.
You know, babe, I should have told you, but I did something bad. I stole this for you, babe.
You took me by.
That they are going back and forth calling each other babe, which is the funniest, best thing, because all the babes in this episode were amazing. It was just, that was one of my favorite parts. And apparently every single babe was scripted. So there you go. Little fun fact.
Good to know. Yeah.
I love that he did that. I love that pranky side of their relationship and how they would both totally think that that was one of the funniest things, and that Jim thought to do that even in the chaos and the awkward situation that they were in. It really brings around the playfulness of it, and it keeps it, the episode, from being like ending a little bit too harsh. And just like we see Jan gluing the Dundee back together, I think that there's that little tiny hint of redemption, not forgiveness. Trust, I'm not going there. Like, this is was an insane evening, but they gave you that tiny bit that it's not as dark as it had seemed.
See, I liked that too.
They give you that tiny touch of it. And I think that that is the right thing to do for a network comedy.
And I think that if the British version of The Office had lasted this long, that we wouldn't have even gotten the ice cream and the CD and the this and the that. It would have ended with the thing that happened at Michael and Jan's place. That's where it would have ended.
Although we do get that horrible moment where Dwight is ignoring the babysitter at the bus stop.
My heart so much.
I hate that part.
I hate it. She waves at him. Oh, I can barely look at that.
I know. I know. And he just, that's so cold. It kills me. That part kills me.
Yeah. Oh, man. I can't.
And that's where it actually ends. Oof. This episode, I highly recommend any kind of reading or anything about it because it was really, really interesting to read a lot of the backstory and everything that went on around this episode. And the Hunter song was written by the guitarist of the New Pornographers, which I thought was pretty cool because they said that it made them laugh the most because there was a whole bunch of versions of the Hunter song that went around that there was even a metal version, they said, which
no
I
way.
Think that would be so funny, but that this one was the most.
You took me by the hand. You made me a man.
There it is. Hunter does not seem very metal from how we met him.
Right. No, unless like being with Jan changed him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So now he's like metal or like what would be like a more country version? Oh, you took me by the hand. You made me a man that one night by the moonlight. And that is my country version.
Oh, my goodness. So here we are at the end of the world's most awkward sitcom episode ever created.
Well, second most awkward.
Second?
Sitcom episode.
Ooh.
Yes.
Scott's Tots.
Yes. Oh, I can't even have you say that without me, the hair on the back of my neck standing up.
Oh, Scott, that's painful.
This is painful too.
Ooh, that is, I wonder, I'm curious from our audience, what's worse, this or Scott's Tots?
Ooh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah. And for those who haven't seen that episode yet, well, like,
you can
judge at that point. Yeah, just you wait, because that is something.
So should we give out our Dundee, which has not been thrown at a little tiny TV?
We should, but first I want to make a note. Folks out there, some of you have been asking on Twitter when the little competition that we're doing for folks to create a playlist that Michael Scott would create for Daryl on The Office to show him what rap is. You were to put together an Apple Music playlist and send it our way. That you have 2 weeks. You have 2 weeks to get those in. So if you haven't gotten them in yet, then get those in. And Tiff and I are going to listen to those and we will judge and have a winner. And yeah, that's going to be super exciting. So get those in. You've got 2 weeks to do that. All right. Our Dundee for this week, I'm calling the Woof Award because it was a nice alert that came in just in time over on Twitter from Claire Manship. That's at Womanship on Twitter, because Claire shared with us the Rolling Stone article, that one night, the oral history of the greatest Office episode ever, and just said, hey, thought this might be useful next week. And so that was sent to us on May 31st. And, you know, you and I think have seen this in different places and have seen it across Twitter, but just as, you know, haven't that Claire thought of us as we were getting ready to record this episode, I thought was super cool. And to send it ahead enough in time for us to be able to read that and then have this episode, I think was pretty cool. So Claire Manship, congratulations on your Woof Award. Get on up here and accept your Dundee.
Yeah, this article was super helpful and really great. And we'll link to it in our show notes. And you can go and be sure to follow us over on tall_beats. And you can send us all that information that you like about The Office because we love hearing about it. And if you want to submit your playlist, you can do it to us over there. I don't like do it to us. Let's see. you can give it to us. Oh, nope. Why does this sound so bad every time?
You can send it to us.
Yeah, you can send it to us over there. And be sure to check us out over at The Incomparable. And you can subscribe to become a member and hang out in our members-only Slack where we talk about The Office all the time. And you can rate, star, review us on Apple Podcasts. And wherever you listen to your podcasts, you can star them in various things. We just really like awards. We like awards and we won't throw them at tiny TVs. So Make sure you join us back here next week when we talk about the episode Chair Model.
Oh, Tom Cruise.
Not him. The guy, the president of California.
Katie Holmes.
No, it's married to her.
Does anyone read the paper?
Travel to lands we've never been, my love.